back together again, you and I, chatting it up Tuesday style, the 21st of January, 2025, on Connecticut Today. I open up the show talking about a proposal in Hartford to lower the state's blood alcohol DUI threshold from 0.08 to 0.05%. State House Republican leader Vin Candelora talked about a push possibly to rein in Connecticut's Trust Act for illegal aliens. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio joined us to chat about more early legislation being introduced in the General Assembly, and CBS News correspondent Chris Fox from Austin, Texas, briefed us on the Trump White House immigration enforcement push.
Look, I'm all for road safety. I think, any logical person is. How many times do I talk about this on this show? People passing me on the right. I had some morons passing me on the right side the other day, speeding in the typical vehicle, the $2,000 rims, the license plate with the cover there to try and steal toll money, the darkened windows, the neon lights, the typical one of those cars, passes me on the right. On the rumble strip there, your friendly host here was almost killed the other day. So that sort of stuff I want to crack downs on. The idiots, the morons I talk to you about every night that I see driving on 95 in the parkway and 91 on the way home. You've seen them weaving inside and outside of all these different lanes doing 90, 95, 100 miles an hour. Sure, absolutely. Of course we want, more safety in that situation. But there's a proposal now that I think is going to create criminality, and we talked about this last year and the year before. Apparently now there is a push when it would be so much easier to go after the cars out there that are actually rolling hazards, not to mention the guys and gals who are probably doing weed in the car. How many stories have we had about that? But again, we passed this ridiculous law that ties the hands of our fine men and women on the highway. So instead of getting, reckless drivers off the road, instead of cracking down on people who may be smoking marijuana in cars and causing all these wrong-way accidents on the roads, we're going to turn to alcohol. Now, okay, I don't think people should be driving drunk. I've said that for years and years, and I'm free and open to you about the couple of times I did it, scared the crap out of myself, sitting there in the car going, how did I get here, and have vowed to never do that again? And I didn't. But now we're apparently on the precipice here of another push to lower the standard of what's considered legal intoxication on the roads from where it is right now at 0.08, which I think 49 states have, down to 0.05. In other words, 0.08 would be 0.08%, should say. So a little under 0.1% of blood alcohol. There's a push now to lower that again to 0.05. Now, this is being pushed by the same legislators that pushed it last time, among them Democratic State Senator Christine Cohen on the shoreline there outside of New Haven and Guilford. Now, look, we all want to get drunk drivers off the road, but are we sure this is going to help? And you may say to yourself, well, Paul, what's the problem if we're doing that here? Yeah, but do we want to create criminality? Cohen said, quote, obviously what we've seen over the past couple of years has made us hyper-focused on road safety. Okay, I agree with that. Only Utah has adopted the lower standard, down to 0.05. 100 countries, including 25 of the 27 members of the EU, have it, according to the State Office of Legislative Research. Okay. I get that. I understand that Europe can do what it wants. But again, here's my point. Are we going to go through this even though we're not sure it's going to work? In other words, when you talk about some of these wrong-way crashes and accidents and sadly occurrences on the road that we hope maybe could have been prevented, do we know whether 0.08 or 0.05 would make a difference, honestly? Or is this just feel-good stuff? DOT Commissioner Garrett Ucolito planning to ask the General Assembly to increase penalties for drivers who injure workers on state road sites from the current $2,500 to $10,000 and double the current $10,000 fine for motorists who kill workers. That's all well and good. But are we going to go ahead and do something here that's going to affect some people who may not be breaking the law now? Because if you pull them over, they would be at a 0.07 or 0.08. And if you go to 0.05, you're going to be, in essence, turning them into criminals. Does that make any sense? Does it make sense to just blindly say, hey, and again, I'm not defending drunk driving here, but does this make any sense? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Now, again, Connecticut went from 0.10, 0.1% blood alcohol, down to 0.08, 0.08 of 1% blood alcohol back in 2002, and everybody had to go to 0.08 years ago to maintain your federal highway funding. There's no huge national push to go to 0.05. Now, look, it would be great if nobody drank and drove. We know that's not going to happen. But what is the empirical data outside of the state of Utah, which, let's face it, has a lot of people that don't drink to begin with? Are we going to do this and create criminality? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. You go out to have a nice dinner with your friends, your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, And you have maybe your two drinks when you're doing that. Now, is that going to be limited to just one drink? If you have your two drinks, maybe everybody's different. Body mass is different. Men and women, they're all different. Body size, height, weight, fat content on a person. We get that. We understand that. But are you going to be now creating criminality here when you really don't have, at least what I'm reading, really don't have any empirical data to say that this is definitely going to work? Should we go from 0.08, 0.01 blood alcohol, down to 0.05? 329 deaths last year on Connecticut roads, 14 more in the first few weeks of 2025. Yes, there are a requisite number of idiots on the road there. Nobody's going to argue that. But does that automatically mean that we should drop the blood alcohol impairment standard from 0.08 to 0.05? Now, years ago, it used to be 0.10, 0.1% blood alcohol. That was lowered to 0.08 of 1%. Now, the idea is to go to 0.05. And my point is, look, in a perfect world, in a panacea, nobody would drink and drive. I've done it before. Haven't done it, thankfully, for about 40 years. I swore that off like the second time, said, no, 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 not me, Kimo Sabe. Not me, Gunga Din. Not happening anymore to this kid. So why are we doing this? Now, will they say it worked in Utah? Okay. That's good. That's one out of 49 other states. Well, the European Union has it. Okay. Here's my point. I'm not endorsing drunk driving here, but we're going to be creating criminality if we do this. What do I mean? Simple. Because right now, you know, it's at 0.8, so you may have people out there that drive at a 0.06 or 0.07. Listen, no level of impairment is good, but if you go to 0.05 and somebody forgets, or they say, hey, I'm still going to have my two drinks or my drink, or hey, for a smaller woman, that could be one drink. It could. If you look at the charts, are we creating criminality here? What do you think? Am I wrong on this? Should we definitely go to 0.05? Mike in Bridgeport starts us off. Hey, Mike, you're on WICC. How are you, sir?
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Good, great. Good.
Been listening to you talking about traffic laws and enforcement.
Yeah.
I don't think 405 is going to do it. That's two beers. Everyone's different. Some know how to drive better. Some don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of wanted to address a larger aspect
sure.
of, you were talking about speeding the other day
mm-hmm.
and then drunk driving, is that we're constantly doing negative reinforcement and ticketing and penalty systems versus taking a more proactive approach and training people how to drive, better testing them and retesting them.
Mm.
If you want to change public behavior, I think a more proactive approach would be more effective.
Interesting. Mike, thank you. Appreciate the call there. Yeah, I've talked about those aspects too. You know, don't want to get into it today, but you know, there's always the aspect of, you know, on one end, you crack down on drunk driving. On the other end, you confiscate the cars of excessive speeders more. In fact, that's actually built into this package of bills as well. That's another idea. And maybe retesting elderly folks. But the question here about alcohol intake, listen, people are always going to drink to one extent or another here, right? Shouldn't do it. I don't. I mean, I may have a drink at a restaurant twice a year. And again, I'm not trying to hold myself up as some bastion of suburban goodness here. I'm not. But I number one, I'm also on a couple of medications I don't want to mix booze with. So I have like five or six drinks a year. That's it. And believe me, I like anything Sam Adams makes. Yes, I like a nice, well-made kamikaze on the rocks. Trust me, it goes down easy. But what if we went from 0.08 to 0.05 and I get pulled over and drinking what I usually drink or rarely drink, that now makes me a criminal? I don't know if I want that. Judy in New Haven. Hi, Judy. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paulie. How you doing?
Good, Judy. What's up?
I don't think that lowering the BAC is not... It's kind of laughable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about all the rules and regulations we already have in place on the highways and byways, and people are violating. The rule makers are going to violate one way or the other. But your point about, you know, creating criminality, I hadn't even thought of that, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, think about it, Judy. If you or I go out, and let's say we have two drinks, and right now that would put us at a, you know, 0.06 or 0.07 if we get pulled over. Well, if they lower that, guess what? We're getting arrested.
Well, I, like you, am on the wagon. I mean, I'm really on the wagon, 22 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm disgusted by what's happening. My own brother was killed by a drunk driver.
Oh.
And so, this is a very personal issue. A friend, a boss of mine, also killed by a drunk driver. So, you know, the question here is addiction. You know, people who are not addicted don't have a problem with not drinking and driving.
Yeah.
They simply don't.
Yeah.
They do it another way.
Yeah, and Judy, like you, I have a connection to this too. And Judy, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. The son of the wife of a buddy of mine, she lost her only child to a drunk driver. So it's rough. Do we go from 0.08 blood alcohol level for impairment down to 0.05? That may be considered again. They tried it twice at the General Assembly, and it didn't go through. Dave in Brantford's with us. Dave, how about you, sir?
Yeah, a lot of points. Well, I definitely don't want it dropped. I think the point is to call it drunk driving when you can't even determine the degree of impairment.
Mm-hmm.
You need a digital medical device to determine if you're legal or not, which is ridiculous. Drunk driving used to be, I'm in my 70s.
Okay.
The standard used to be 2.0.
Oh, yeah.
And then it went down to 1.6, 1.2 by several degrees. And then the federal highway money, if we didn't drop it to a 0.08,
yep.
as I recall, the federal mm-hmm. government forced us to adopt the 0.8. And as it gets lower, and the problem with the drunken drivers is they're way over the limit.
Thank you, Dave. And I'm great because, Dave, and I was talking about this with somebody at the station here a little while ago when they asked me what I was going to start with. Dave, you see the mugshots of some of these people that do survive but maybe kill somebody. You're right. They're not at 0.08. They're at like 0.16 or 0.24. They're way up there.
And, Paul, I want to emphasize, when I was a kid, even children could determine who was a drunk at the party. And they'd say, Daddy, that guy's drunk. He shouldn't drive. Now, if we drop it to 05, you can't smell anything. You can't see anything.
Yeah.
There's no way to detect impairment. Again, you need a digital medical device to determine who should drive. President Biden should not drive, and he's not drunk at all. And there's no blow in the meter test to determine what's too impaired. The problem is marijuana. The legislature allowed it. It's causing trouble, and they're trying to cover up their tracks by picking on us older generation people. And I hardly drink at all. I'm like you.
Mm-hmm.
However, I will have a glass of wine at my anniversary or birthday party.
Good for
but
you.
I don't want that. You know, I don't want that to say, and those mad people, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, there's no, that blue-haired Temperance League type, they're coming back again. They're dangerous. They cause prohibition. Look at the trouble that made.
All right, Dave, thank you. Appreciate it, folks. What do you think? 203-333-9422. Are you in favor or not? Do we go from 0.08, 0.08 of 1% blood alcohol for impairment down to 0.05? State House Republican Leader Vin Candelora on the line talking about an incident the other day that the, I guess... the Democratic leadership and the office of Governor Ned Lamont have still been a bit quiet on. Vin, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. Good. How are you?
Good, Vin. Have we heard anything in response at all to this sad story, Vin, that made national news about how the state would not hold this guy who sexually assaulted two kids, who was in jail, got out. ICE put an immigration detainer on him because we want to get this guy out of here. And because of this Trust Act, I guess that's empowered here, the state just let the guy go. I mean, is anybody saying anything out of the governor's office of in on this or not?
No, they're trying to deflect the issue and make it sound like we need all, you know, Republicans want all illegals deported. And they won't address the fact that Connecticut is a sanctuary state. They're harboring criminals. They're not only turning a blind eye to criminals, they're actually enabling them to be harbored and hidden from the law. And it's outrageous. We saw pardon and paroles. Also, had the pedophile pardoned to avoid deportation. And then there was the other case in Hartford. It's hard to keep track of them all, but
yeah.
Where... somebody that was subject to deportation orders, the officers are prohibited from communicating.
Yeah.
And ICE had gone in and deported them on their own without the cooperation of the local authorities. And it is too, our laws are too broadly put in place to protect the illegal immigrant criminals. And the problem with that is you do a disservice to all immigrants because now you don't talk about immigration reform. You're talking about getting the criminals out of here, and our illegals are all painted with the same brush.
You know, Vin, and what we're hearing now from a lot of big city police departments, and look, you and I both know the men and women of the local police do a wonderful job, but they're kind of playing along here saying, well, if we cooperate with ICE, then we won't get any cooperation on other crimes. Now, Vin, okay, I know they don't talk a lot if they can't, but I don't hear or see this groundswell of police departments saying, hey, we've been solving so many cases because we have this wonderful relationship with the immigrant community. Now, that may be the case, but you can't say it and never give us more information on it. To me, it just sounds like, I'm not going to say it's a bogus argument, but if you're going to say that, Vin, you've got to give people evidence of that, don't you?
Yeah, you absolutely do. And I think, you know, our law enforcement have been beaten into submission by all the terrible laws that have been put in place that tie their hands, that essentially put gag orders on them. And I just don't think, you know, you can't thread the needle, or you can't walk the tightrope on this. You really kind of have to take a position. And that is, we need to take a position of law order, like we've seen Trump do. We need to get our country back. We need to secure the borders, and we need to bring public safety back in our communities. And, you know, I hope we're not on the losing end of this. If we continue with these sanctuary state policies, not only are we at risk of losing federal funding, but again, we become a national harbor state for all these criminals. And the drug cartels are already here. They're not nice people. They're committing sex trafficking, drug trafficking. And why Democrats can't see this as wrong and focus on that rather than continue to be the antagonists for our president purely out of political motives, it's just not good for the state of Connecticut.
Yeah, and Vin, you know, I talk about these cases on the show here with people like you, and I put them on my social media feeds, and I honestly, Vin, get responses from people I know, but even people on the other side of the aisle saying, well, this can't be happening. And I said, well, yeah. Yes, it is. And Vin, it's amazing how many people, even common sense Democrats, see this and they go, well, why is this allowed? I say, well, who'd you vote for? I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Right. And this is why Trump won in the first place. I think, granted, he didn't win the state of Connecticut. But, you know, you talk to people in Texas, the southern border, and what they've gone through.
Yeah.
And it's bad out there. And our state is kind of slow to wake up. But, you know, it's kind of the rich suburbs that have insulated themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They have the money to be insulated from all the unaffordability policies. They're insulated from the city violence. And, you know, unfortunately, they continue to vote Democrat, and they don't realize that their policies are actually too extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And any extreme is not good. And this is why, you know, we are starting to see some of it, you know, very strict policies on immigration, because it's too out of control for too long. 30 million people have come into this country illegally right now.
Yeah, and Vin, finally, you know, we do have about 120,000 illegals in this state. Now, at the same time, people won't talk about that or they don't like to, but these are the same people that complain that there's no housing. I mean, you can't have it
That's both ways,
but you can't have it both ways. You can't.
Well, no housing and the number of car accidents with the lack of insurance. You know, there are public safety elements. The culture of our state has changed. And some of that, frankly, is with the immigration population and people that are not following the rules. And the state of Connecticut, these Democrats tell them they don't need to follow the rules.
Vin, thank you. Vin Candelora, State House Republican leader. Vin, keep up the good fight and don't let him. Thanks, Vin. Don't let him wiggle away on this case of this. It's time for our weekly chat with Megan Portfolio, the Hartford Portfolio blog, and the Yankee Institute, Ms. Portfolio. You like that sinister opening music there? You like that, huh?
Oh, my God. Can you please play that every time I come on the show?
You like that, don't you?
I want that to be my theme music.
What are you, some sort of Dark Knight here? Is that what you're doing for us?
I don't know. It did make me feel, like, very feisty.
Yeah, well, don't worry. William Tong, he'll protect you from all evil.
So I'm sorry, I didn't get to watch a lot of the inauguration yesterday because they literally dumped like 70-some-odd pages of bills yesterday I was reading.
Yeah.
But apparently the world's coming to end, but let me know if it is because I'm going to run out and get one of those like Johnny Walker blue scotch that I've always wanted to try but didn't want to pay $200 for.
Yo, come on. What's money to you? Somebody like you? Come on.
Go. I work for a nonprofit, Paul.
Yeah, but you know, say you only live once, Megan. You know.
All right, I'm going to run out and buy that.
That's it. See, I gave you the imprimatur for that. So listen, what are you sniffing around? What do you see? What do you hear that the people should know about, Megan? What's lurking?
Oh, well, energy.
Yeah.
the biggest issue, in my opinion, on everyone's mind, the Democrat leadership put in a bill, or kind of a bill, sort of a bill. It's still in the concept stages, called the Ratepayers First Energy Bill. And as of right now, I'm hoping it's not like the snowstorm that we just had where it was like, oh, my God, this is like crazy. And then we got like 3 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So like right when I first heard that name, I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Like I'll be able to build a snowman like with the snow. But then I was disappointed. So far, I'm a little disappointed because there's really no details in it other than Senator Duff did say that, you know, the best way to address like costs for energy is just or the cheapest energy is the energy we don't use. So that was very useful to me. So I've been, you know, unplugging everything and, you know, walking around in the dark to cut down on my electric bill.
Carrying around a candle from room to room. Is that what you're doing?
A lighter.
Oh my God. See, Megan, I think
there is like some good stuff in it.
Yeah.
they're saying that, you know, they want to start looking more at nuclear, which I'm, you know, a big fan of.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I can't just open up a nuclear plant tomorrow. There's so many regulations with the feds and the state, and then there's activists. So,
yeah.
Like, you're not looking, you're looking at like 15 years before we get a nuclear plant up and running.
And then they're like,
hydro. And hydro's awesome. I love hydro. Like, up in Canada and
Hydro-Quebec,
northern
yeah.
New York, they yeah. love their hydro.
Yeah.
But there's not an infinite amount of hydro, and Canada is already saying, like, with all this green stuff and electricity we're using, you know, they don't have as much hydro power to give out as, you know, they thought.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good, but, I mean, I don't know what really that's going to do about our energy bill.
And you know what, Megan? I mean, even Governor Lamont, to his credit, he says, listen, we use a boatload of natural gas, and we need more natural gas, but you and I both know, Megan, what happens whenever you mention that. The environmental folks, with all due respect, I know they want a clean environment, they go nuts and they just say no, no, no. So what are they exactly for? That's the thing that bothers me.
Well, the activists are for just 100% clean. But Governor Lamont did talk about natural gas, but the problem with natural gas is, you know, we've got activists, you know, protesting everything, and then you've got New York being a pain in the butt. Sorry, New York, but mm-hmm. you're being a pain in the butt,
mm-hmm.
and you won't, you know, extend your pipeline to help us out. So, and actually, the Democrat leadership didn't even mention natural gas that I heard anyway in their
yeah.
speech. So I don't know if they're even considering natural gas as an option. And for right now, for the present, It's an okay option. Is it the greatest? Is it the cleanest? No, but it's better than coal and oil.
Yeah.
So, you know, we do, if you want to electrify everything, we're going to need a source to actually produce that electricity. And unfortunately, natural gas is abundant, and, you know, we should be looking at that in the near future. I'm not mm-hmm. saying we're going to let's extend natural gas to the end of days. You know, obviously there's going to be new technology and other
yeah.
stuff ramping up. But for right now, you want to do all this green stuff. You want to have all this electrification. Well, we're going to need to somehow come up with a way to power it all up. One thing I did find interesting is they didn't seem that interested in a bill that's called Ratepayers First, actually listening to the ratepayers. So
mm-hmm.
you and I both know everyone's been screaming about public benefits charge.
Sure, sure.
Scott Pearson, our friend,
yep.
his petition is actually now over 70,000
mm-hmm.
signatures. When I wrote my column on Friday, it was
yeah.
a little bit under 70,000.
Yeah.
So he picked up another like 300 some odd
wow.
Signatures just between Friday and today. And they don't really have much interest in doing much with it. They were kind of flippant when they were talking about the fact that we have to pay for wealthy folks that get rebates for their car chargers.
Oh.
And, it's not going to be that much money.
Oh.
And it's kind of not the point. It shouldn't be on our bill, and it shouldn't be on us to pay for that.
Well, exactly.
And then the other thing, they didn't seem interested in moving over the big portion of the public benefits charge, which is, of course, the millstone.
Sure.
They didn't really seem interested in moving that over to the general fund or finding another way to pay for that, which that's actually super insulting to us UI and Eversource customers
mm-hmm.
because New England uses millstone. Like, I think it's 15% of the power
yeah.
from the regional grid is from millstone.
Sure.
So you're asking Connecticut, Eversource, and UI ratepayers to pay for this, and that's really not fair. So
yeah.
hopefully, you know, it's ratepayers first. Hopefully they actually do listen to the ratepayers and really start addressing that portion of our bill,
along with
the other stuff.
Yeah, and
well.
I mean, look, I want, with all due respect, I'll just say it. I love the technology. I'm a car guy. I read all the car magazines every month. I don't want to help anybody who buys the average EV is about 56,000, 5,700, 56 grand, 57 grand off the floor. Look, if somebody can afford that, Megan, they don't need my help. I'm sorry. They just are charging or whatever. No, sorry. If that makes me a jerk, I apologize. I'm sorry.
No, it makes you just normal, and you shouldn't have to. I mean, you weren't put on this earth to buy car chargers for other people while you're struggling to pay your own bills.
Yeah, I'm running around in my little 16 grand putt-putt, but I've got to help somebody pay for a $58,000 car. No, thank you. Finally, it sounds, Megan, like His Excellency, Governor Lamont, is not all that enamored again with this money for strikers bill. Did I read that? Did I see where he's like,
He's been pretty solid on that issue.
Yeah.
And he even, when he was just a business guy. He had his own telecom company.
Yeah, yeah.
They, you know, he, I don't think, he, or was it that? Or maybe I'm confusing issues. I think I might be confusing issues, but no, sorry. There's so 80 pages of bills makes my brain all like a, just dead.
It's okay.
He has been pretty strong against that. And it's funny because the supporters of this bill in the General Assembly, they keep, you know, talking about workers. This is so good for workers. But the union workforce is like 6.7% of the entire workforce. So it's not really helping workers. Workers are the other, you know, 94%. And this bill does nothing for it other than yet, you know, have the government sticking its nose in the business of, you know, negotiations between the unions and management, and doesn't belong there. They shouldn't be tipping the scales for that at the expense of, you know, people that actually have to put into this unemployment insurance fund. Like, you start handing that out to people that, you know, really don't qualify for it. What are you going to do to that fund? What are you going to do to the businesses that pay into it? Is that going to increase their rates? I don't know. But hopefully that bill just goes away also.
Well, I am intrigued, though, Megan. Finally, I am intrigued whether it's a budget bill or that bill. Now that the General Assembly has veto-proof majorities in both chambers, of course, the Dems gained some House votes the last time out. I wonder if they will actually, even though there may be a wrath from Ned and Annie, if they would go as far as to override a veto on some of these things now, because they can do that now. That's fascinating.
Can, you know, Speaker of the House Ritter, I don't always agree with him, but he does. I mean, he does listen and he does talk to Republicans. He does talk to the governor. He doesn't always cave into the progressive caucus.
Yeah.
So hopefully we don't have to see that, because I think he enjoys having like somewhat of a decent working environment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, between him and the executive branch.
Yeah.
So I don't want to predict anything, and I definitely don't want to jinx it. Okay. But I mean, I don't know if that's what he wants to use the veto on when there's so many other issues out there. And if you're literally, all this striking worker bill does is help people that wrote the bill would actually benefit from this bill, which I find very bizarre that they're actually allowing people that would actually, who could go on strike and get paid for it, to actually write the bill. I thought,
wait, you think that's bizarre? How long have we been talking in this segment?
I know. I'm hoping maybe one day someone will hear me and raise the issue and like, listen, you guys, if you're going to financially benefit from something, you can't be putting your name on the bill and voting for it.
No. Well, she watches all the lunacy in Hartford. Check out the Hartford Portfolio, Megan Portfolio, Yankee Institute, and all that. Megan, we will talk to you next week. Take care.
All right, sir.
All right. Megan Portfolio there, Yankee Institute. Check it out. She breaks down all this stuff. She watches hours and hours of CTN. And as she tells us every week, she actually sits there and reads this stuff. All right, let's take a quick hop down to Texas, which, of course, is kind of the epicenter of all the immigration talk and the finger-pointing and the yelling between both sides. Chris Fox, CBS correspondent in Austin. Hey, Chris, good afternoon. Good to chat with you. Just a couple of quick minutes here. What are you hearing? What are the people in Texas hearing about what Mr. Trump has promised to do and what may be underway along the border there?
We found out a little bit of what it might look like, especially the mass deportation effort.
Mm-hmm.
Back in late November, when the land commissioner of Texas, Don Buckingham, offered up 1,400 acres in Stark County along the Texas-Mexico border, along the Rio Grande, up to lease by the federal government, and Tom Homan said, "Yes, we'll go for it." And so we know kind of where it'll all start. What it'll look like still is yet to be decided.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to see yesterday. You mentioned about a story earlier. Mentioned all the governors who were at the inauguration. Governor Abbott, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, one of those.
Yeah.
And there was an interesting moment when President Trump was boasting about the Texas border security effort over the last 4 years, and looked down and noticed that Governor Abbott was sitting right there.
Yeah.
And they kind of had it was somewhat of a bromance. I have not seen Governor Abbott with a smile that big on his face in the last 4 years, especially when talking about the wall or anything having to do with the border. But it was the beginning of a lovely bromance. And he's been tweeting. He's taken to social media for the last 2 days talking about it. Today, just like 45 minutes ago, even saying, we're ready to work, Mr. President. Glad to finally have a partner in the White House. who will work with Texas to secure the border. And yesterday saying something along the lines of America is back. So he's way excited. It'll be interesting to see the Democrats in Texas. Now the Operation Lone Star border security effort is about a $13 to $14 billion effort that was funded by the state of Texas.
Yeah.
And now that President Trump is back in office, I think a lot of the Democrats will say, hey, we can pull back on funding for this.
Interesting.
Yeah. It will be to see how that plays out, because the state legislature just gaveled in last week.
Mm-hmm.
And in Texas, they only meet every other year for 140 days from January to June. And so we'll find out in the next few months how the state of Texas will respond to President Trump. One of the other things they set up was the land commissioner set something up called the Jocelyn Initiative.
Yeah.
That was named after the 12-year-old Houston girl, Jocelyn Nungery, who police say was killed by Venezuelan nationals. And the Jocelyn Initiative is to identify property in Texas that the federal government could use going forward for border security efforts and the mass deportation effort. And so it also kind of seems that some have pointed to Texas as trying to make some money back after spending so much.
Why not? Hey, good stuff again. Chris Fox keeping us updated there from Austin, Texas. Chris,
be good. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
it's
believe me, Chris. I am watching it. Chris, thank you for hanging out today with us. We appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, Chris Fox there, Austin, Texas.